High above Tenupe, Fell Defender was still shuddering from the Killick's opening salvo, when a grim calm came to the battle meld, and Leia understood what Jaina and Zek were about to do. "We can't waste any more time being sneaky," she whispered. Alima Rar had just joined the meld. Leia could sense the Twi'lek in the atmosphere below, hovering behind Jaina and Zek, calculating and resolute, and slightly amused by the idea of using them for bait. "We need to board the Falcon now." Tarfang chortled something that sounded a little like impossible. He was the only one in the group who could stand upright in the oily-smelling conveyance tunnel.
"Tarfang is right."
June pointed into the bustling hangar, toward an out-of-the-way corner, where about 50 Chiss troopers in black deflection armor stood in a tight cordon around the Falcon.
"They know we're coming. That security platoon is clearly waiting for us." "So?"
Saba rasped.
"Maybe they will give us a good fight for a change."
"Yeah, maybe too good," Han said. "We can probably take the security platoon, but those maintenance guys are all carrying."
"Han, Alima Rar has joined the battle meld," Leia said. "I think Jaina and Zek are going to serve as her decoys, to pull the escorts off."
"What are we waiting for?"
Han raised the T-21 repeating blaster that Cockmamon Meewal had liberated from the detention center's contraband vault, along with the rest of the group's weapons, then started to duck walk out of the conveyance tunnel.
"Let's go get my ship back."
Saba used the Force to stop Han in his tracks.
"A plan would be good."
"You want a plan?"
He pointed at Saba and Leia.
"Okay, you two make a distraction. Cockmame, you and Meewal sneak aboard and take out the squad I'm sure they've got waiting to ambush us. Tarfang, you and I blast anyone who even looks our way."
He glanced back to Saba.
"How's that for a plan?"
"Good,"
Saba said.
"It's vague and incomplete,"
June objected.
"So?"
Han demanded. Leia stopped listening as Cockmamon Meewal crept out of the conveyance tunnel. They slipped behind an empty missile rack, waiting to be sent back up the tunnel for reloading, then began to work their way along the wall toward the Falcon. They were so adept at camouflaging themselves that even Leia lost sight of them within 5 steps. Saba pointed at one of the overhead storage gantries where clawcraft were moored before they were prepped for flight. One of the starfighters began to sway in its suspension rack, then suddenly came loose and fell to the floor with a deafening crash. All eyes in the hangar turned toward the sound, and Leia led Han and the others out of the conveyance tunnel at a sprint, dashing between empty armament racks, crouching behind parked utility carts, hiding behind portable diagnostic units. Saba's distraction proved so dramatic that work came to a standstill, as astonished technicians, pilots, and even the security platoon guarding the Falcon watched the emergency response team rush to investigate. By the time the officers recovered from their own shock and began to fill the echoing hangar with shouted commands to return to work, Leia and her companions were kneeling behind a self-portable turbolaser charging tank. The Falcon was only about 20 meters away, the security cordon about half that distance. Leia signaled the others to be ready, then used the Force to create a loud creak in the storage gantries directly above the security platoon. The troops immediately looked up, already suspicious enough to raise their Carrick rifles. Leia force-grabbed a clawcraft hanging over their heads and began to swing it back and forth. The troops immediately began to back away from the Falcon, until their female officer started barking commands at them. In the next moment, the officer was sliding across the deck with her arms flailing, still screeching orders in a panicked voice and gesturing at the gantries. The soldiers stared after her in confusion, or looked up into the gantries and scowled. None of them noticed the slender, chest-high forms of 2 Nogri appearing out of the shadows behind them, then slipping up the Falcon's boarding ramp. Leia gave the swinging clawcraft a violent twist, and it came free of its mountings.
The security platoon shouted the alarm and dived for cover, many of them zinging blind reaction shots into the gantries as they moved. An instant later, the starfighter crashed down in their midst, scattering cannon arms and pieces of armor plating in every direction. Leia and Saba were already leading the rush toward the Falcon, lightsabers in hand, but not ignited. For a moment, the security troops continued to focus their attention overhead, thinking their attackers must be up in the gantries. Then one of them noticed Leia and the others racing toward the ship and shouted the alarm. Leia and Saba force-jerked half a dozen Carrick rifles out of the troopers' hands and sent the weapons skittering across the floor. Han and Tarfang began to lay suppression fire, but that didn't prevent the security platoon from launching a counterattack. Leia and Saba activated their lightsabers and began to weave an impenetrable shield of light, synchronizing their movements through the battle mill so that one blade was always in position to block without interfering with the other. Unlike blaster bolts, which carried little kinetic energy, each maser beam struck so hard that the blow nearly knocked the lightsaber from Leia's hand. Sometimes she called on the Force to reinforce her grasp and batted the beam back at her attacker. And other times, she redirected the energy, using it to move her blade into its next position. But no attacks penetrated their shield, and soon Leia and the others were all backing up the boarding ramp into the Falcon. Han raised the ramp, then winced at the sound of the maser bolts pinging into the ship's hull. A pair of metallic feet came clanking down the corridor behind them. Then C-3PO said,
"Thank goodness you're here. They've been tearing the ship apart."
"Who?" Leia asked.
"Lieutenant Vero Toglio and his subordinates. They reactivated me and kept demanding that I tell them where the smuggling compartments were. When I explained that I wasn't authorized to reveal that information, they threatened to pour acid into my lubricators."
"Where are they now?" Leia asked.
"Waiting with Cockbane and Meewall in the aft hold, I believe."
Leia turned to Han. "Saba and I can handle that. You get us out of here." Han started up the corridor at a run, and Leia and Saba went aft. As C-3PO had said, Lieutenant Vero Toglio had torn the Falcon apart, emptying stowage cabinets, disassembling the medical bay, even opening the service panels in the ceiling. By the time they reached the hold, Leia was mad enough to stow the lieutenant and his squad on the wrong side of a soon-to-be-open airlock. But when she saw how battered and bloody the Chiss already were, she decided that Cockmame and Meewall had punished them enough. Leia herded the limping and slumping squad onto the cargo lift and simply offloaded them. The lift was still retracting when the Falcon rose from the deck and swung toward the hangar mouth. Chiss being Chiss, Leia was fairly certain that Vero Toglio had hidden a tracking device, a bomb, or both, somewhere aboard. She sent Cockmame and Meewall to do a security sweep. Then she and Saba hurried to the turrets to engage the quad cannons. Leia had barely buckled into her firing seat before Han had the Falcon shooting toward the hangar mouth. A handful of security troops pelted the hull with maser beams, but there was no question of anyone trying to stop them by sealing the barrier field. With the Killix attacking, the Chiss had more important things to worry about than escaping prisoners. The Defender was gushing clawcraft as fast as she could, and the Deckmaster wasn't going to interrupt the launch for anything. Before venturing out into the tempest of energy erupting just beyond the Defender's shields, the starfighters were using the shelter of her expansive belly to form up by squadrons. Han simply dropped the Falcon's nose and dived, leaving Leia, whose turret happened to be facing aft, staring up into the flashing madness of the battle above. The sky was at once black with smoke and descending dart ships, and dappled with the blue brilliance of blossoming turbolaser strikes. And already, the flaming hulks of two Chiss Star Destroyers were plummeting groundward in an uncontrolled gyre. The Falcon suddenly veered out from under the battle, and Han announced, "Got him." Leia checked her targeting display, and saw that the Falcon was about 5 kilometers above a pair of Chiss defoliators and closing rapidly. The defoliator escorts were badly out of position, bunched up in front of the two craft as they fired at unseen targets that Leia assumed to be Jaina and Zek. Leia spun her turret around and touched Jaina and Zek in the Force, urging them not to sacrifice themselves. Help was on the way. All they had to do was drop back into the clouds and wait. But Alima Rar had never been patient. She continued to pour impatience into the meld, demanding that Jaina and Zek keep attacking. Raynar's will continued to weigh on the two Jedi Knights, and they began to exchange cannon bolts with the escorts. Then the blinding dots of two torpedo detonations flared about 3 kilometers ahead of the Falcon, and when the static cleared from Leia's targeting display, the trailing defoliator was gone. "Han, get us there now!" Leia ordered over the intercom.
"Sure."
The Falcon accelerated, and long tongues of flame began to lick past the turret canopy.
"What's a little entry burn?"
By the time the second set of torpedoes detonated, they were close enough to see the thick cloud of clawcraft swarming around Jaina and Zek's stealth exes, and to see how clumsily both craft were handling as they dived for the clouds. Even if Leia hadn't been able to feel it through the Force, she would have known just by looking that her daughter and Zek were in desperate straits, and there was no sign of Alima going to help them. The Twi'lek had vanished from the battle meld as soon as she destroyed the second defoliator, and now she was doing nothing to help her decoys.
"Anybody see what happened to Alima?" Leia asked. "I'd like to send a few cannon bolts her way."
"It looks like she's going after something," Han said. "And so are the Chiss."
Leia checked her targeting display and saw that 8 clawcraft had entered a power dive, chasing something big and slow with an erratic flight pattern.
"What is it?"
"A wing."
June was silent for a moment, then added,
"With 2 huge bombs attached to it."
Leia had a sinking feeling. "How close are they to the battle zone?"
"It doesn't matter," Han said. "This time my daughter comes first. What do I care if her creepy friends get wiped?"
"Han!"
Leia swung her turret around and began to pour laser bolts toward the clawcraft harassing Jaina and Zek. "You do know stealth X's can eavesdrop on intercom transmissions at this range?"
"They can? The stealth X's primary mission is spying,"
Saba reminded him. She opened fire too, and some of the clawcraft began to disperse and come after the Falcon.
"But maybe they're not listening."
"Who cares?"
Han asked.
"Jaina knows I'm just worried about her." "She also knows that you know she can take care of herself,"
Saba said.
"And that you would never let the Chiss rupture one of those parasite bombs. Even a few eggs might be enough to kill her friend's species."
Han sighed.
"You're saying we have to recover that wing, aren't you?"
"I'm afraid so," Leia said. The strength of the living Force in the jungle overwhelmed Leia's physical senses. Her ears hummed with its energy. Her skin prickled beneath its warm pressure. Even her vision had begun to cast the rain in a soft green glow. She found herself perceiving with her spirit rather than with her body, becoming a part of the jungle rather than a visitor to it. Saba was reacting a little differently. She was creeping along the vine-swaddled Mogo branches with all the stealth of a hungry rapard, barely stirring the thick foliage, except when she suddenly fell on some hissing rodent or popped out of hiding to snatch a passing buzzbird. Leia might have been bothered by the trail of death that her master's predatory instinct was laying behind them, had she not felt like half the jungle was trying to eat her. Through the Force, she could sense everything, from tiny bloodbats to packs of Ewok-sized spiders, all of them on the hunt, stalking her through the canopy, watching and waiting for an opportunity to attack. The prevalence of predators made Leia worry about Jaina and Zek, who had gone down in their crippled stealth exes. She could feel them somewhere out there in this same ravening jungle, badly battered, but still alive, together, and apparently holed up in a safe place. They actually seemed more worried about Leia than she was about them, and they were pouring reassurance into the Force, encouraging Leia and Saba to deal with the parasite bombs first, and them second. That was easier said than done, of course. Han was doing his best to draw the enemy out of the area by flying top cover over a different part of the jungle, but it wouldn't be long before the Chiss realized it was a ruse. The soft beeps coming from Leia's scanner finally fused into a single long whine. She checked the display and saw that the metal signature she had been following for the last half hour was in the center of the small screen, indicating she was now on top of the Source. She stopped and crouched down on the mossy Mogo branch, her lightsaber in hand, in case one of the predators stalking her decided to try its luck. The defoliator's wing lay about 20 meters below, bent backward over a Mogo branch. Both weapon mountings were empty, and the bombs were nowhere in sight.
"Bloa!"
Leia yelled. Her outburst sent a troop of long-armed monkey lizards swinging away through the trees, screeching and hissing in alarm. Saba watched them go with a hungry leer, her long tongue flickering between her pebbly lips. "Focus, Master," Leia urged. She pulled her scanner off her utility belt, then programmed it to ignore the wing and turned in a slow circle. She was about halfway around when the scanner began to beep again, and a contact blip appeared at the top of the screen.
"Found something," Leia reported.
"This one too," Saba answered.
Leia glanced over her shoulder and saw Saba staring in the opposite direction. "Of course, it would have been too much to ask that they fall together," Leia complained. "We'll have to split up."
"It's okay, Jedi Solo. This one is not afraid."
Sissing with laughter, Saba turned and force-jumped down to an adjacent branch. Leia watched the barrable vanish into the foliage, worried that perhaps she was absorbing more than Jedi wisdom from her master. She actually understood the joke. Leia took a bearing to her own contact, then selected a safe-looking branch to serve as her intermediate landing point, and force leapt into the rain. On the way down, a cold shiver of danger sense raced along Leia's spine, and she felt something hungry descending on her from above. The hiss of air rushing over wing scales began to rise behind her, and she rolled into a force flip and ignited her lightsaber, bringing the blade up through the body of something huge, green, and musty-smelling. The snake bird fell away in two pieces. Then Leia sensed her target branch coming up behind her, fast. She reached out to it in the Force and drew herself over to it, landing backward in the wet moss and nearly slipping off the branch. Leia's danger sense continued to ripple. She could hear a large river purling through the jungle somewhere far below, but she had no sense of where this new predator was hiding. She turned in a slow circle. When she saw nothing but clouds of emerald foliage, she reached out in the Force, but she felt only the same hunters as before. This danger was something different, something that could hide itself in the Force. Leia stilled herself and began to search for an empty place in the gauzy fog of the living Force on Tanupe. It didn't take long to find. There was an odd calm where her branch connected to the Mogo's trunk, hidden behind a green curtain of strangle vines. Still holding her lightsaber in one hand, she drew her blaster and began to fire into the vines. The snap hiss of an igniting lightsaber sounded from inside the mass of vines. Then a blade so blue it was almost black sliced through the foliage and began to bat Leia's bolts aside. The tangle of vines quickly fell away, revealing a blue-skinned Twi'lek female with an amputated headtail and one withered arm hanging useless beneath a sagging shoulder. She wore a Stealth X flight suit two sizes too small for her slender figure. Her front zipper, opened down to the navel. Leia stopped firing and touched Saba through their battle meld, trying to let her know she'd found something as important as the bombs. Alima Rar, I should have known you'd crawl out of a hole around here somewhere.
Come now, princess, Alima purred. We are both here to destroy the bombs. Perhaps we should work together.
I've seen your kind of cooperation, Leia said. It nearly got my daughter killed. Alima gave a couple of throat clicks, then said,
It was necessary for the good of the colony. Jaina and Zek understood that.
They understand that you ran out on them, Leia countered. Now that she was alert to it, she could feel the Twi'lek trying to use the Force against her, to dampen her negative thoughts and bolster the positive ones. Fortunately, there weren't many positive ones. And so do I.
We had to destroy the bombs!
Alima put a little urgency in her voice, and complemented it by pushing harder with the Force. We still have to destroy the bombs.
Okay,
Leia said, deciding to switch tactics. She reached out in the Force, trying to make her own voice sound beguiling and reasonable. I've never been one to hold a grudge. If you want to work together, Alima, just pass over your lightsaber and other weapons.
Really?
Alima started to unbuckle her utility belt, then blinked both eyes in astonishment and let out a jagged little throat rattle.
Nice try, princess. But we don't think so.
Good. Leia smiled, looking forward to the surprise she was about to visit upon the Twi'lek.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Leia charged, firing her blaster pistol with one hand and activating her lightsaber with the other. Alima rushed to meet the attack, igniting her own lightsaber, wielding it with her one good arm and easily deflecting the stream of bolts. They met at a large burrow, where a smaller limb converged with its parent, their lightsabers coming together in a sizzle of sparks and color. Leia jolted Alima with a one-handed power attack that hammered the Twi'lek's block down easily, then whipped her blade around in a buzzing backslash at a pulsing span of blue, undefended throat. Alima dropped to her haunches and somehow snap-kicked from that impossible position, and Leia's middle exploded into pain. The princess exhaled hard, forcing the pain out, and didn't yield a centimeter. She swept her blade down to attack the extended leg, but Alima had already drawn her foot back, and she ended up blocking the Twi'lek's blade as it came sizzling in at her knees. Leia rolled her wrist and sent Alima's lightsaber flying, then brought her blaster pistol around and allowed herself a small smirk as she opened fire. It was too soon to gloat. Alima was already twisting away and launching herself backward in the air, her hand extended to recall her falling lightsaber. A pair of bolts burned past the Twi'lek's legs, so close that her flight suit began to smoke. But she rolled into an evasive Force tumble and landed unscathed on the adjacent branch and slipped. She inhaled sharply and started to fall, then hooked the back of her knee over the branch and caught herself. Leia fired at the knee, but Alima was already swinging around, facing her, deep blue lightsaber in hand, batting blaster bolts straight back at her. Leia stopped firing. The Twi'lek slipped back into the branch moss in a seated position, then brought her leg up and stretched it along the branch, staring at her boot. Leia's earlier slash had not missed after all. The front half of Alima's boot was missing, along with half her foot. The Twi'lek turned toward Leia, her unblinking eyes wide in astonishment and anger, and that was when Leia's comlink earpiece crackled to life.
How's it going down there?
Han asked.
Busy,
Leia said into her throat mic.
Any sign of the bombs?
Han pressed.
Not really. Gotta go, Leia said. I'm sort of in the middle of something.
Determined not to let her prey escape, Leia force-jumped from her branch toward Alima's. The Twi'lek's withered arms swung up, reaching toward Leia. The princess tucked into an evasive somersault, then felt herself rolling the wrong way as her feet were force-jerked in the opposite direction. She called on the force to stop her rotation, but by then, the back of her head was thonking into the side of the branch. The moss was not as thick on the sides of the branches. The sound echoed inside her skull so hard that Leia thought she would never hear anything else. Then she felt her feet whipping down from above and sensed the darkness rising up to swallow her, and she knew she had come to one of those terrible instants when everything depended on willpower and the stubborn desire to live. Fortunately, Saba had prepared her well for such moments. Leia found her arms lashing out behind her, one elbow hooking over the branch to stop her fall. Leia felt the blaster pistol in one hand and her lightsaber in the other. Another of Saba's lessons ringing inside her head. Never, never drop your weapon. Die with your weapon still in your hand. And Leia started to fire the blaster, pointing it down the branch where the trouble, who was it again, seemed to lie. A familiar voice sounded in her ear.
Hey, that sounds like blaster fire.
Han. Yeah, it is. Leia started to recall the situation. A jungle, a Twi'lek, a fight, a Lima Rar.
Now, be quiet!
Leia shook her head. Big mistake. Then whipped her leg up over the branch, still firing. The darkness faded from her eyes, but her blaster bolts were snaking toward their target in slow motion, while the target, a shimmering blue mirage that seemed to have 3 heads and 6 arms, was limping toward her, behind a lightsaber moving so fast that it seemed to be weaving a shield of solid light. Then one of the 6 blue arms moved. Leia's blaster flew from her own hand and vanished into the billowing greenness of the out-of-focus jungle. The fight was not going exactly as planned. Saba always said that planning would be Leia's downfall, that she planned too much and felt too little. She had also said that a Shenbit always saves its deepest bite for last. Leia pushed off the mossy branch and brought her feet up beneath her. Leia began to advance on her 3-headed, 6-armed opponent, weaving her blade through the frenzied slash, slice, and rip of a bearable rage attack. To Leia's astonishment, the 3-headed enemy suddenly stopped advancing, then began to retreat.
Wait, this is silly.
Again that beguiling voice and that furtive force touch, trying to dampen the negative thoughts and bolster the positive ones. Alima pointed her lightsaber over the side of the branch.
The bomb is right down there.
Leia stopped advancing, more to give her eyes a chance to bring her enemy into focus than because she was considering the offer, and glanced down. There did seem to be a big silver blur lying in a bed of green.
It would be a shame to let the Chiss recover it, Alima said. Can't we strike a truce long enough to destroy it? Then finish killing each other.
Leia pretended to consider the offer while her vision finished clearing. Then, when Alima's extra heads and arms disappeared, she shook her own head.
Let's do it now.
Leia started forward and instantly regretted her decision when the branch bounced and nearly buckled her knees. She noticed it sagging beneath her weight and realized she was farther out on the end than she perceived in her foggy-headed state. Alima was quick to press her advantage, hobbling forward to attack, launching a flurry of strike and force-push combinations that drove Leia back even farther toward the tip of the bouncing branch. The branch sagged so precariously that the princess had to force-stick herself in place.
Hey, those sound like lightsabers,
Han observed over Leia's earpiece.
They are, Leia growled. Can you just hold on?
Now the branch was bouncing even when the princess wasn't moving, and her danger sense was covering her back with goosebumps.
Then comprehension finally burned its way through the concussion fog inside Leia's head.
The danger she was sensing had nothing to do with Alima. a predator had landed behind her, something large enough to weigh down a limb the size of her thigh. Alima smiled.
Dinner time, princess.
Leia's blood began to burn with a very bearable-like rage. She would not die at the hands of some Twi'lek dancing girl or at the claws of some jungle flunky. She went on the attack, forgetting her slow reactions and foggy head and uneven footing, and let the battle take her. Let her lightsaber block and slash and stab of its own accord. Let her feet dance back and forth over the bouncing limb. Alima came at her just as strongly, kicking with her half foot, stretching out for long lightsaber lunges, pushing constantly through the force, steadily driving Leia back toward the hungry presence that she could now sense coming up behind her. Then a wisp of hot breath brushed the back of Leia's neck, and she knew it was time. The princess tried a throat slash and swung wide, deliberately leaving herself open for a heart thrust. Never having been one to resist temptation, Alima could not help lunging for the kill. Leia had already flexed her knees and was springing off the sagging branch, bringing her feet up over her head in an open force flip. She saw the Twi'lek stretched out below her, not quite off balance, but not far from it, her neck craned back as she watched her target fly overhead. Leia brought her lightsaber down, striking for the head. Alima could only whip her lightsaber up in a desperate block. The blades clashed in a growling shower of sparks and light. Then the princess was swinging down behind her, twisting around to plant one foot between the Twi'lek's shoulders and send her stumbling toward the shaggy mass that had been creeping up behind Leia. There was no time to tell what kind of creature the thing was. All Leia saw was something the size of a bantha taking Alima's sword arm in its jaws. The Twi'lek screamed in pain. Then four spiky pedipalps emerged from the side of the creature's mouth and began to feed her in. Alima's legs were still outside, kicking wildly, when Leia felt the thing's attention fall on her and noticed six beady eyes peering out from beneath the mossy scales that covered its head. Before it could spring, the princess brought her lightsaber down, cutting the branch away at her feet. Instead of plummeting toward the jungle floor, the creature swung outward, hanging suspended by a thick, ropey tail that ascended more than 10 meters to a branch above. It was even larger than Leia had first imagined, with a long, slug-like body that had dozens of tiny feet wriggling on the underside. Alima remained in its mouth, kicking her feet and presumably screaming into its throat. Leia locked her lightsaber blade in the on position, then used the force to send it spinning through the tail. The predator, whatever it was, did not open its mouth or roar in pain. It simply plummeted groundward, filling the jungle with a terrific banging and cracking as it crashed through the Mogo boughs, then finally splashed into the dark river below. Leia called her lightsaber back to her hand and had barely switched it off before Han's voice came over her earpiece again.
Leia?
Don't worry, Han, she said. I'm still here.
That's good.
Han sounded more impatient than relieved, or even surprised.
But about those bombs, you'd better hurry. Their scanners must have picked something up from that fight you and Saba were having. Because you've got a bunch of claw craft headed your way.
Great. Leia sighed. Can't a girl catch her breath? Still feeling a little unsteady from her fight, especially the head blow, Leia peered over the side of the branch toward the silver blur she had glimpsed earlier. The blur was gone, and in place of the bough upon which it had been resting, there was only the jagged stub of a broken limb.
Blow!
Leia cursed. She snatched the scanner off her utility belt and found a very weak signal down at ground level, slowly moving away.
It's in the river!
A loud sissing sounded behind her, and Leia looked back to see Saba standing near the Mogo trunk, studying her own scanner and holding a thermal detonator in her hand.
Nothing ever goes according to plan, does it?
The bearable asked.
This one does not know why you bother with plans at all.
It's a human thing, I guess, Leia said. Did you destroy the other bomb?
Of course,
the bearable replied.
Not all of us were wasting our time fighting bug huggers and knocking ourselves in the head. The parasite bomb is destroyed.
Then what are you doing just standing there? Leia demanded.
This one has been watching.
Saba displayed her entire set of fangs.
She is very proud.
Proud? Leia cried. I could have been killed.
No.
Saba shook her head.
This one taught you too well.
Leia felt her jaw drop. Is that a compliment, Master Sabatine?
Yes.
Saba thumped her hand against her chest.
This one did very well, given the material she had to work with.
Gee, that's swell,
Han said in Leia's earpiece.
But if you two can break up the mutual admiration meeting for just a minute, what about that second bomb?
No problem. Leia checked her scanner again. The signal had moved perhaps 50 meters in the last few seconds, but it had grown so weak that she could barely find it anymore.
Blast! Now it's sinking!
Yes, that is what happens when you drop something heavy in the river,
Saba said. She activated her thermal detonator, then tossed it in the direction of the bomb and used the force to guide it to the fading blip on their scanners.
You will have to be more careful next time, Jedi Solo.
The blip faded from the scanner. The tiny bloop of something small entering the water sounded from the same direction. Then the sharp whoosh of an underwater detonation rose up through the trees.
Did you get it?
Han asked. Leia checked her scanner. There was still no blip on the screen.
Let's say we did. Because even if we didn't, the Chiss will never find it either.
She motioned Saba to start climbing.
Let's go. It's time to go get my daughter.
The interior of Stomper 1 filled with soft whirrings and electronic chirpings as the assault shuttle's passengers began their final systems checks. Each soldier worked his servo motors and confirmed the calibration of his targeting systems with two adjacent units, then executed a quick comm scan to be certain he was receiving on all channels. Because this platoon was assigned directly to the assault commander, Jedi Grandmaster Luke Skywalker, they all performed a vocabulator check as well. The phrase, check sound, check basic, reverberated through the passenger cabin 32 times. Always in the ultra-deep, ultra-male version of Lando Calrissian's voice, which remained the standard for the entire line of YVH combat droids. The gravelly voice of the Megador's tactical control officer came over the flight deck speaker.
Task Force Stomper cleared for assault. Be advised, colony capital ships and dart ship swarms attempting to return to support Akbar. Time of breakthrough uncertain.
Acknowledged. Luke didn't bother to check his tactical display for a tally of the enemy vessels. The number was going to be high, and it didn't matter. In 15 minutes, he would either be aboard the Akbar fighting Raynar, or the eternal war that Jason had foreseen would be erupting into full blossom. Luke sealed his vacuum suit, then transmitted the attack order to the other 50 assault shuttles in his all-droid brigade and pushed his own throttles forward. Stomper in, he reported to the Megador.
Good hunting, my friend.
This voice belonged to Pelion.
And may the Force be with you.
The Admiral Akbar lay only 10 kilometers ahead, her bump-nosed silhouette surrounded by a swirling shell of Killik dart ships that were rapidly being vaporized by Alliance turbolaser strikes. Her main engines lit space as she struggled to retreat toward Tanupe, but she was ensnared by the heavy-duty tractor beams of half a dozen pirate nabber star destroyers identical to herself. Raynar would have been much wiser to send his fighter screen out to counterattack his captors, but he appeared to be holding the dart ships back to deal with Task Force Stomper. That was what Admiral Buatu had predicted he would do, and so far, the Bothan seemed correct. Beyond the Akbar, dozens of what Luke thought of as Shard-class capital ships were abandoning the battle on Tanupe to rush to Raynar's aid. Somewhat chunky and conical, they ranged in length from a kilometer and a half to nearly 10, but each had one broad, rounded end and several jagged sides. The Battle of Tanupe itself continued to rage, a flashing red stain that now spread across a quarter of the planet. Most of the Chiss fleet was down in the clouds and hidden from sight, but some of the colony's larger ships were silhouetted against the flickering brilliance below. The four Nest ships that had escaped the Jedi at the Murgo Choke were clustered near the heart of the battle, pouring a terrible rain of fire down upon the planet from one side of their hulls, while the other hurled turbo laser potshots at the Alliance. The Akbar's shields began to flicker with overload discharge, then collapsed in a string of bright, colorful flashes. Control's voice came over the speaker in Luke's helmet.
Target is shields down. All main battery switched to formation defense. All squadrons released for strafing runs.
The order had little to do with Task Force Stomper, but Luke was glad Control had included his channel in the transmission array. The sound of a non-electronic voice reminded him that he was not attacking the Akbar alone, that he and his bug crunchers were merely the tip of a spear being driven by an entire attack fleet. The Alliance batteries quickly obeyed Control's order and switched fire to the approaching Shard flotilla. The fighter squadrons left the safe stations where they'd been waiting out the turbo blaster exchange and streaked in to attack, painting whole swaths of space blue with their engine efflux. The Akbar's close-range cannons weaved a web of laser bolts in their paths, and the colony's dart ships drew back, creating an even tighter shell around the beleaguered Star Destroyer. Bad mistake. Buatu had predicted the tactic. The Alliance fighter squadrons blew through the shell behind a flurry of proton torpedoes, then fell on the Akbar like a thousand hawk bats, strafing her weapons turrets and clearing the way for Task Force Stomper. A squadron and a half of starfighters, the 18 craft that had been in the maintenance base when the Killiks captured the Akbar, dropped out of the hangar bay and turned to meet Luke's assault shuttles. Buatu had predicted that too. Rogue Squadron slashed in from its escort station and eliminated the interceptors in three fiery passes. By then, Task Force Stomper had closed to within 3 kilometers of the Akbar, with only the dart ships to prevent them from reaching their target. The swarm peeled away from its combat with the starfighter squadrons and came after the assault shuttles. Exactly as Buatu had expected. One of the Alliance's pirate Nabber Star Destroyers slid its tractor beam over and simply pulled the dart ships away in a tumbling mass. Nothing remained between Task Force Stomper and its target but 1,000 meters of laser-laced space. Luke activated his Task Force command channel.
We're on our own now. Fan out and get in fast.
Stomper 2 acknowledging.
The platoon's droid leader responded.
Stomper 3 acknowledging.
A long series of deep-voiced acknowledgments began to sound inside Luke's helmet, 49 other platoons in all. The assault shuttles were just beginning to fan out when one of them suddenly flew apart. There was no flash or fireball. The passenger cabin simply came apart at the seams, spilling its cargo of bug crunchers out into the void. As Luke was checking his tactical display to find the shuttle's number, another one came apart. He frowned and opened the channel to the pilots.
Stomper 12, what happened to your shuttle?
The reply came in the electronic tones of a voice synthesizer, since Stomper 12's pilot was currently floating through a vacuum and unable to produce any sounds with his own vocabulator.
It disintegrated.
I can see that, Luke said. What caused? Luke let the question trail off when he suddenly felt the force drawing in around him, as though gathering itself for a powerful, violent release. He had just enough time to create a bubble of counterpressure around himself before every damage alarm on his control panel came to life. The cockpit simply came apart around him, and he found himself tumbling through space in the midst of a flotsam cloud. Raynar Thul. Luke opened a brigade-wide channel.
All dismounted Stomper units continue toward original target zones under individual propulsion.
Again came the long string of acknowledgments. Luke used the Force to hitch a ride on a passing droid, as his own platoon fired their thrusters and weaved through a blinding tangle of laser bolts, zipping starfighters, and rocket exhaust toward their target zone. They lost 2 units to lucky cannon strikes, and 3 more to ramming dart ships. But the Alliance starfighters were doing a good job of suppressing the enemy defenses. And Stomper 1 reached the Akbar's bridge in good order, and with more than enough strength to perform their mission. Luke reached out in the Force, and found Raynar reaching back, descending rapidly from the command deck atop the bridge structure. Raynar's presence was as murky and heavy as always, and as soon as Luke felt it, it began to press down inside, urging him to turn back. Luke did not resist. He was going to leave. He wanted to leave. With Raynar. Stomper 1 and his assistant had already finished placing the breaching charges. The rest of the platoon was arrayed around Luke on the Akbar's hull, shielding him with their hulking bodies, and firing their 4-arm-mounted blaster cannons at a flight of incoming dart ships. Luke could see tiny divots forming in the droid's laminamium body armor as the enemy's weapons silently made their mark.
What are you waiting for?
Luke calmed Stomper 1.
Detonate!
But when it came to procedure, even war droids could not be hurried.
Stay clear,
Stomper 1 calmed.
Fire in the hole!
Then he detonated the charge. Luke's faceplate darkened against the brilliance of the blast, but not so completely that he missed the flash of Stomper 1's blaster cannons firing into the breached hull. Then Stomper 1 pronounced,
Clear!
And began ordering,
Go! Go! Go!
At 1-second intervals, sending a bug cruncher through the hole with each command. By the 4th go, Luke's faceplate had returned to its normal tint, and he could see a steady stream of captured food containers, membrosia waxes, and chunks of spitcrete gushing out the breach into space.
Grandmaster Commander?
The lead droid asked.
Thanks.
Luke ducked through the hole into the interior of what had once been the junior officer's mess. The Jedi Master started toward the interior exit, where the first bug crunchers were already trying to override the decompression safety and open the hatch. The interior hatch finally irised open, and the decompression blow brought 6 Kylliks tumbling out. The bug crunchers opened fire with their blaster cannons, shattering the tough pressure carapaces before the bugs could react, then pushed through the doorway with weapons still blazing. By the time the 4th droid had gone through, a synthesized voice was already sounding the all-clear inside Luke's helmet. Luke stepped through the hatchway and found himself in a narrow corridor littered with dead Kylliks and pieces of shattered carapace. A closed hatchway sealed either end of the short passage. The corridor was hardly the ideal place for a lightsaber duel, but it would have to do. Luke could already sense a furious Raynar Thul at the far end of the passage, using his brute force strength to wrest open the safety-sealed hatch. As soon as the last of his platoon had entered the corridor, Luke pointed to the hatch through which they'd come.
Make that hatch airtight.
As you wish, sir.
The droids quickly went to work, sealing the hatch to the officer's mess and using their blaster cannons to spot weld the others closed so the platoon could not be ambushed. When Luke noticed they were leaving the hatch directly behind them open, he pointed to it.
Fix that hatch, too.
He started up the corridor toward the hatch at the far end.
We won't be retreating.
Stomper 1's synthesized voice assumed a note of approval.
Very good, sir.
Luke felt the Force stir as Raynar made a final exertion.
They're coming. Prepare for...
The far hatch suddenly ruptured inward, bringing with it a short-lived decompression squall that rocked Luke back on his heels and hazed the corridor with airborne dust. He glimpsed a tall figure in a black pressure suit. Then the figure flicked one of his hands, and Luke found himself flying backward, bouncing off YVH droids and tumbling out of control. He reached out in the force, grabbing at passing hatches, the ceiling, even Raynar himself, but he was whirling too fast to catch hold of anything. He hit the end of the corridor with a tremendous clung, unsure whether he was upside down or sideways, then crashed to the floor, struggling to remain conscious. By the time his eyes came back into focus, the corridor had erupted into a crashing storm of cannon bolts and shattergun pellets. The lower two-thirds of the corridor was blocked by a wall of laminanium bug cruncher armor, but the upper third of the passage belonged to Raynar's Killix. Still in their pressure carapaces, they were scurrying through the smoke along the walls and ceiling, pouring shattergun pellets down the droids' heads, trying to get past so they could launch an attack from the rear. Luke rolled to his feet and watched in astonishment as his helmet dropped to the floor in two pieces. He glanced at the wall behind him and saw a fist-deep depression where its impact had dented the durasteel.
Can't let him do that again,
Luke groaned. He averted his eyes and spoke into his throat mic.
Dazers!
The corridor erupted in rainbow iridescence. Then a piercing squeal came over Luke's earpiece, and the smell of ripe hubba gourds filled his nostrils. Stunned by the dazer's aura-deadening properties, several Killix dropped off the ceiling into the midst of the bug crunchers. The rest of the insects were soon spread overhead in yellow smears. Luke had already rushed forward, only to find himself trapped behind his own bug crunchers and unable to see the rest of the battle.
Make a hole, he ordered. Coming through.
Three bug crunchers blocking his way obediently stepped aside, and Luke found himself staring up 10 meters of corridor packed chest-high with Killix corpses and twisted YVH frames. At the other end, with his black helmet lying in a melted gob before him, and the fingers of his vac-suit gloves burned off by all the force energy he'd been throwing around, stood Luke's melt-faced opponent, Raynar Thul. Luke jumped onto the pile of chitin and metal in front of him. Two of Raynar's Unu bodyguards immediately popped up and sent a burst of shattergun pellets zipping down the corridor toward him. Luke flicked his hand and force batted the projectiles into a wall. Then the bug crunchers at his back sent a stream of cannon fire down the hall. Raynar ignited a gold lightsaber and deflected most of the volley, but a few of the bolts made it through and splattered his bodyguards across the walls.
It's not too late to surrender.
Luke started forward at a walk.
I'm not eager to do this.
Raynar's burn-scarred lips twitched in a faint hint of a smile.
We are.
Raynar raised his lightsaber and jumped onto the carnage heap. Luke ignited his own blade and raced forward, using the force to keep himself from stumbling over debris. A loud crunching erupted behind him as the surviving droids raced after him. Then half a dozen of Raynar's bodyguards leapt up from the other end of the pile and started forward, firing shatterguns with their lower set of arms and carrying flame tridents with their upper pair. A flurry of cannon bolts zipped past Luke from behind and took out three insects. Raynar pointed at the attacking droids. A muffled thump erupted inside one of them, and it went down in a sizzling, popping crash of laminanium. Luke killed the last of Raynar's bodyguards by force-slamming them into a wall so hard their thoraxes burst. Then the two Jedi were on one another, their lightsabers flashing toward each other's heads with all the speed and might they could summon. That was the trouble with powerful men, especially younger ones. Awed by their own strength, they so often believed strength was the answer to every problem. Luke was older and wiser. While Raynar swung, he pivoted. As Raynar's gold blade sliced the air where Luke's head had been, Luke's boot was kicking him behind the ankles, knocking his legs out from under him and stretching him out flat. But Raynar was a Jedi, and all Jedi were quick. He caught himself in the Force, levitating himself just long enough to bring his golden blade sweeping in at Luke's shoulder. Luke had no choice but to block with his blade, and no place to block but the forearm. Raynar's lightsaber went spinning off, still securely in the grasp of his three-fingered hand, and caught one of Luke's bug crunchers squarely in the back. The weapon sliced through 6 centimeters of laminamium armor before the severed forearm flew free. The blade deactivated, and the hilt disappeared into the tangle of death and destruction at the droid's feet. The pain of losing an arm might have forced a common Jedi to stop fighting, but Raynar was no common Jedi. He had the Force potential of the colony to draw on, and he did that now, swinging his remaining hand up to hurl Luke down the corridor as he'd done before. But this time, Luke was ready. He placed his own hand in front of Raynar's and rooted himself in the heart of the Force. And when he did that, he became the very essence of the immovable object. Nothing could dislodge him. Not one of Lando's asteroid tuggers. Not the Megador's 16 ion engines. Not the black hole at the center of the galaxy itself. Luke stood that way, waiting, dimly aware that his surviving bug crunchers were moving into defensive positions, one at his back and the other just inside the burst hatch. Raynar continued to struggle, trying to hurl Luke down the corridor, trying to move him a single centimeter. Luke didn't budge, and finally, Raynar stopped struggling and met his eyes with a stunned and anguished gaze. The master sighed and shook his head.
What am I going to do with you, Raynar Thule? You learn nothing from your mistakes.
Luke deactivated his lightsaber and picked Raynar up by the collar and slammed him against the wall. He used the Force to pin him there, waiting for an answer to his question, watching as the expression in his captive's pained eyes turned from astonishment to anger to calculation. But when Raynar's free hand rose, it was not to summon the Force lightning that Luke had expected. It was to call his lightsaber back, to attempt to continue the battle that he obviously could no longer win. It was in that moment that Luke finally decided that the life of Raynar Thule would be spared. He intercepted the weapon and used the Force to pin Raynar's remaining arm against the wall along with the rest of his body. Then he opened the hilt of the captured lightsaber and removed the focusing crystal. He held it up in front of Raynar.
Someday, I may return this, but for now, it's staying with me.
He zipped the gem into a pocket of his vac suit, then reached out to Raynar in the Force and spoke in a softer voice.
Your days as Unu Thule are done, Raynar. It's time to surrender and come home.
The eyes beneath Raynar's lumpy brow flashed with alarm.
The colony is our home.
Luke shook his head.
That can't be anymore, Raynar,
he said.
The colony can't be anymore. If you stay with the Kylix, the entire species will die.
How?
Because as long as you are the prime Unu, Lomi Plo will be the queen of the Gorok.
Luke began to press.
And as long as there is a Gorog, the colony will be a threat to the Chiss.
The Chiss are a threat to the colony.
That's right. The Chiss are a threat to the colony,
Luke said.
They have developed a weapon that can wipe out the entire colony. They tried to use it here. Jaina and Zek stopped them. But we both know they have more.
Backed by Luke's strength, the truth was too much for Raynar. His will broke, and his resolve turned to panic.
We know.
Luke continued to push.
And they'll use it, if you stay with the colony.
Raynar shook his head.
We can't let them.
Then you have to leave,
It's the only way to save the Kylix.
A terrible sadness came to Reynar's melted face. He lowered his burned eyelids and reluctantly began to nod, then suddenly stopped and glanced toward the hatch through which he had burst earlier.
Not the only way.
Reynar's voice assumed a dark tone.
Maybe there is a weapon to kill the Chiss.
Luke resisted the temptation to look toward the hatch. Lomi Plo would not show herself if she knew she was expected.
Even if there was such a weapon, it wouldn't be right to use it. The Jedi won't permit speciesside against the Chiss any more than we would against the Kylix.
But you could, if it was self-defense.
Reynar bared his jagged teeth in a try at a grin.
Destroying the Chiss would be self-defense, so you would have to permit it.
If it were self-defense, we might have to permit it,
Luke said.
But even that wouldn't save the colony. It cannot survive as it is. We know that.
How do we know that? We know no such thing.
We might,
Luke insisted.
If the colony grew too large, it would devour its own worlds and destroy itself.
There are always more worlds.
Not always, Luke said. Sometimes all of the other worlds are taken. That could have been what happened when the Kylix disappeared from Alderaan.
Luke paused.
In fact, I'm sure that's what happened on Alderaan. The Kylix devoured their own world and tried to take someone else's. That's the reason the Celestials drove the Kylix into the unknown regions.
The fight finally went out of Reynar.
You're sure?
He folded his cauterized forearm stump across his stomach and cradled it with his other arm, his lips quivering in pain and tears welling in his eyes.
You know.
The question was drowned out by the roar of a blaster cannon, and Luke glanced down the corridor to see the bug cruncher stationed there suddenly powering down. The droid fell out of the opening backward and crashed to the deck. Then Lomi Plo scuttled through the hatchway on her mismatched set of legs, one human, the other insectile. She turned her bulbous eyes and noseless face down the corridor, then extended her crooked upper arms toward the lightsaber in Luke's hands. The last remaining bug cruncher opened fire, forcing Lomi Plo to ignite the lightsaber in her lower set of hands. Her blocks and parries came so slowly that she was barely able to deflect the cannon bolts, and she was forced to swing her upper arms toward the droid and drain its power. Reynar, thankfully, continued to stand dazed and seemingly impotent. Determined to reach Lomi Plo before she drained his lightsaber's power cell, Luke sprang down the corridor and leapt off the carnage heap to attack. Lomi blocked his first pass with her white lightsaber. Then, in place of the purple lightsaber she'd left in Jason at the end of their last meeting, she ignited a familiar-looking green blade, the lightsaber Reynar had confiscated on Wotaba. Luke's lightsaber.
Now you're just ticking me off, Luke said.
Lomi clacked her mandibles and hissed, then launched a deadly low-high-low combination with her flashing blades. Luke parried, ducked, and jumped, then brought an elbow up under her mandibles and sent her staggering back, all four arms flailing as she struggled to catch her balance on her mismatched legs. Luke whipped his blade around, cocking it for a death slash across her middle, then had a prickle of danger sense between his shoulder blades and tried to spin away. He almost made it. Something heavy and huge slammed into his shoulder, a shattergun pellet, and sent him tumbling across the floor past Lomi Plo's feet. He tried a reactionary slash as he rolled by, only to discover that he was no longer holding his lightsaber, and he could not move his prosthetic hand, nor the rest of his arm. Lomi Plo's two blades began to chop the floor behind him, so he used the force to accelerate himself and continue to roll, then came to his feet 2 meters on the other side of her and called his lightsaber back to his good hand. The weapon arrived just ahead of Lomi Plo, and suddenly Luke found himself on the defensive, being driven into a corner while Raynar Thules, not so impotent after all, used his other hand to fire more shattergun pellets. Luke dropped to his side and caught Lomi Plo's human leg in a scissoring motion between his feet. The knee bent backward and popped with a sickening crunch. She fell, squealing in pain and clacking her mandibles, and redoubled her attacks, slashing so ferociously with her twin blades that Luke's lone hand barely had the strength to block. Still dodging shattergun pellets, rolling back and forth on the floor and parrying madly, Luke glanced up the corridor and used the force to reach into the carnage heap beneath Raynar's feet. He grabbed the largest, heaviest thing he could find, a disabled bug cruncher droid, and jerked it free. The pile shifted, and Raynar crashed down on his back, but Luke barely noticed. He was pulling the droid down the corridor, straight at Lomi Plo. She deflected it easily, of course, but she had to spin away from Luke and wave a hand. And that gave him the chance he needed to force spring up the corridor toward Raynar, who was just returning to his feet.
"As I was saying," Luke said, pointing his lightsaber down at Raynar's chest, "you never learn."
Raynar's eyes flashed with alarm and he rolled away, presenting the side of his head for a perfect knockout blow. Luke brought his lightsaber down, but deactivated the blade and flipped it around at the last second to strike at the base of the ear. The blow landed with a sharp crack that suggested a breaking skull, but Luke had no time to worry about Raynar. Lomi Plo was dragging herself out the hatchway, trying to escape into the general confusion of the Akbar's recapture. He sprang after her, using the force to drag her back into the corridor. Lomi Plo whirled around, her lightsabers rising into a guard position, but not attacking. Trapped on the floor with a broken knee, she knew as well as Luke did that she could not defend herself, that he could kill her anytime he wished. Lomi Plo grabbed hold of the sides of the hatchway with two of her hands, then pulled herself up on her insect leg and cocked her head so that only one of her bulbous eyes was turned toward Luke. Lomi Plo came flying at him with both blades flashing, striking high and low from opposite sides in a desperate attempt to finish him off. Luke simply stepped inside her attack and flicked his wrist twice. First, sweeping his blade upward, then whipping it around in a backslash, and she landed at his feet in four parts. Luke stood, looking down at the pieces for a moment, half expecting them to turn to smoke and vanish, or to dissolve like a bad holonet signal. It was hard to believe that a woman of mere flesh and blood and chitin had caused so much trouble, had brought the galaxy to the edge of eternal war. But of course, beings of flesh and blood were always starting wars. That's why the galaxy needed her Jedi. Luke reached down and retrieved the two lightsabers Lomi Plo had been wielding. He tucked the white one inside his flight utilities and hung the green one in its proper place on his belt, then returned to the side of his former student. Raynar was still unconscious, but his vital signs were stable, and he didn't seem to be in any great danger. Luke broke out a medkit and started to work. "Let's get you patched up, son," he said. "We're going home."
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars Dark Nest 3, The Swarm War by Troy Denning. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars Dark Nest 3, The Swarm War is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2006, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.